Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you so much for having me here. I'm a historian, so I will continue what Fiona and Marisela already started. I think it's necessary that we look a little bit closer to the term and the concept of tradition when we want to discuss the topic of this panel. What I will do is I will give you a short history of this concept, which has the concept changed during the 200 years, I would say. And this talk, what I will say, is based on the book I published by Fisher in 2014. And for the English-speaking scholars here, it will be out next February, finally, by Cornell in an English translation. Bruno Latour, the French anthropologist of modern science, once proclaimed that we have never been modern. He argued that the claim of modernity has always been a claim for a revolution in the understanding of time. Modern meant, since the late 19th century, always a contrast or even much more a break with the archaic and stable past. The concept tradition was just the backside, the antipode of the concept modern. As we also learned yesterday from the wonderful keynote by Aram Sinreich about music and copyright, the rise of modern copyright was deeply rooted in the history of modern cultures itself. The modern composer, the modern authors, and the modern copyright were the outcome of the rise of modernity itself. Therefore, I will argue today that we have not just never been modern, but that we have furthermore never been traditional. I will show you that the question what a postcolonial critique of copyright and the postcolonial alternative to copyright could be has, first of all, to deal with the history of the concept of tradition in copyright law. I will guide you through a crash course about the discussion about tradition in copyright. I will show you that these discussions are not limited to debates about cultural contents and cultural properties in the Global South, but have a longer history dating back to the history of Western cultures too. Since the 18th century, when the modern copyright legislation was developed by the new nation states, the basic assumption that something new does not come from God or one's ancestors, or it's not generated in communities, but it's created by an individual, became important for the fabrication of copyright laws. And this new creative individual was from now on called the author, or in the case of music, the composer. As Lydia Gurr has argued, compositions up to 1800 were produced for performance, reflected in the fact that the occasion of the composition and the performance date were listed on the sheet music. After 1800, a shift took place. Several speakers have already mentioned it in musical performance practices, as composers such as Ludwig van Beethoven and Hector Berlioz added more precise instructions to their notations and specified the tempo, the rhythm, and the instrumentations. Early legal handbooks and also the first copyright law about copyright in music, for example in Austria, explicitly mentioned the publishers of anonymous works as the legitimate author. So this is my first chapter. It's about excluding tradition, and this is the quote. I translated it. It's from the Gesetz zum Schutz des Eigentums from 840, and we translated it into English. He, the publisher, first recognized the aesthetic, historic, or ethnographic value of the musical piece in its artistic significance, and has published it with this in mind. Through his own intellectual activity, he has rescued it from hiddenness or forgottenness and truly recreated it for the musical audience, end of quote. copyright had from its beginning strong ties, as we have already heard, with the score. A huge part of cultural production, the traditional, the oral, and the collective, was excluded from copyright in music. As we have heard yesterday from Aram Sinreich, many composers used the material of traditional folk songs for their compositions. As the concept of modernity became important in the 19th century, notions of the unalterable and eternal became rejected in Western culture. But there was a rebirth of the concept of traditional 100 years later, after the decolonization of the Global South in the 1960s and after a renaissance of folklore in the United States at the same time. From its beginning, the separation of the modern and the traditional was biased by European Western assumptions, and these biases in the copyright itself became visible again in the international law discussion since the 1960s, and that's where we still are in. Young decolonized African and Asian states began to question some fundamental assumptions in copyright. And one of these was the exclusion of folklore. In 1963, there was a conference of the International Office of Intellectual Property and the UNESCO in Congo, Brazzaville. It's interesting that at this time, African delegates didn't fundamentally question copyright. Not at all, one must say, but they wanted to enshrine it in Africa. As a first step, they had to explain to the European experts and scholars that they were actually in possession of cultural property too. In the context of pan-Africanism, the African states discovered folklore as a symbol of their cultural heritage. The Indian delegate, we have to remember that India was part of the non-aligned states and was a little bit freer, even raised the argument to leave the international treaties or not to join them if the demands of the Global South would not be considered, for example, the inclusion of folklore. Now I quote, the reason to protect folklore efficiently on an international basis would be to add to works protected by copyright on a national basis as well as by international copyright convention, another great and important realm of artistic work generally appreciated and largely distributed in industrialized countries too, end of quote. But despite these efforts in the 1960s, nothing happened on the level of international law. The Stockholm Protocol of the Bern Convention didn't mention folklore. A note in the minutes of the conference was all what remained of the whole discussions about folklore. The basic assumption of copyright, which since the 18th century had distinguished between the individual work of a single creator and collective creations passed down orally through the generations, remained valid until the 1980s. This distinction is of fundamental economic importance. While the music of developing nations was an economic resource that authors could exploit, the creators of traditional music remained without legal protection. Third parties were free to use and exploit it. Now I come to the reinvention of tradition. It was not until the 1980s that the legal discussions again addressed the exclusion of traditional cultural assets from authors' rights. In 1985, a UNESCO and WIPO working group on the intellectual property aspects of folklore protection developed a model provision, that's kind of a model law, as a guide for national laws to protect folklore against illicit exploitation. If folklore had remained an expression of national heritage back in the 1960s, it became now, in the 80s, a vessel for a separate social identity of the Global South. The UNESCO WIPO Commission recommended that this protection be enshrined outside of copyright because traditional and modern culture creation employ inherently different concepts of time. This is more or less a backup of what Fiona already said with the situation of today. I quote, traditional creation of a community are generally much older than the duration of copyright, so that for these reasons alone, a copyright type protection limited to the life of the author and a relatively short period thereafter does not offer to folklore a long enough protection. Well, a new argument, folklore requires greater protection, had been found to leave the old copyright untouched. And it was an argument which was filled with the old biases of the 18th and 19th century. The softening or even dissolution of central copyright distinctions enshrined in music copyright since the 19th century recently observed, if we one could argue in international law, is inconceivable without post-colonial discourse on traditional culture and folklore. In the 1990s, ethnomusicology scrutinized its own involvement in the music industry and criticized copyrights as ethnocentric and the integration of folklore into African legislation as nationalistic. However, this general criticism of intellectual ownership of traditional culture did not go unquestioned itself. Michael Brown criticized this criticism as romantic assumptions. And in his 1999 yearbook for traditional music, Martin Scherzinger emphasized that copyright need not be ethnocentric a priori, but the concept itself contains an inherent ethnocentrism, I quote. The same kind of thinking separates human beings into non-Western groups on the one hand and Western individuals on the other. It separated their stylist patterns of behavior into non-Western ritual as opposed to Western culture, their creative activity into non-Western craft as opposed to Western art, and their music into non-Western society activity as opposed to Western aesthetic autonomy. End of quote. When in 1998 a new WIPO commission began to negotiate the integration of tradition into the international legal structure of author's rights, the old concept from the 19th century were no longer sacrosanct. Old criteria such as the recording of a work in some form, individual authorship, and limited protection periods will likely, perhaps, be softened or abandoned in a future global legal framework when it will come to an end, all the negotiation. Folklore is now subsumed as a potential source, and this is now the new discourse of innovation and creativity under the concept of traditional knowledge. Timelessness and a lack of author, two attributes that the modern era ascribed to tradition, will perhaps no longer be an obstacle to the inclusion in the legal tradition of copyright. But the old question remains, should tradition be modernized, or should the modern be traditionalized, as Fiona argued? And what would be left of the old copyright if we would start to think outside these binary terms, modern and traditional? And after we acknowledge that we are all hybrids now, thank you for your attention.